Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
In our studio for the, I think, third time now is Doug Stanton, the Odyssey of Echo Company, the book that came out, what year did the original come out?
Last September.
Last September is out in paperback now, today, on this, the 50th anniversary, not today, but 2018 is the 50th anniversary of the Tet Offensive, too. Mm-hmm. And that's what the book is about. You remember him from Horse Soldiers. You remember him from In Harm's Way. If you are, I don't want to even put it in the niche of if you're into military history or military stories, because I'm not. I'm into well-told stories, and your stuff is just always the best. Thanks for coming in.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's great to be back in this chair. It's fun to think I've been here for three books. And I appreciate your comment, because I really am trying to tell a human story.
Well, that's what it is. And I sometimes wince when I read some, the first three pages of this, what did you call it? The Invocation or something?
Yeah, exactly.
Are harrowing. I mean, if you just want to know what it would be like for a kid now in harm's way, not the title of this book, in Vietnam, read that and then find new respect for the men that served over there. And it's funny how you came upon this story. Tell us about how you came upon the story of the Echo Company.
Sure. I was in Afghanistan in 2005 researching my book Horse Soldiers, which became the movie 12 Strong recently. So thinking a lot about Afghanistan, but in the helicopter was an elderly or older gentleman still in Army uniform by the name of Stanley Parker, whom you'll now meet in the Odyssey of Echo Company. But back then, he had read this is a funny story, he'd read In Harm's Way and said, would you write a story ever about the Tet Offensive and my buddies from Gary, Indiana, surviving the Tet Offensive, because I feel your World War II story is a survival story. And I agreed with Stan. It wasn't until 2011 that I actually reconnected with Stan. I'd thought about it a lot at the Air Force Academy where I was speaking, and we started this correspondence. And in 2014, we went back to Vietnam, and really that was the signal moment in his homecoming from that war.
That those guys needed more time to actually get ready to talk about and tell their stories.
It's the 50th anniversary of the Tet Offensive, one of the signature key turning points in America, and many people listening, if they were around then, will remember seeing those attacks on their television screens. There's that, but there's also the American male, the American guy of that generation turning 70. And when you and I talked a long time ago about the World War II book In Harm's Way, those people were turning 70. And that really had a lot to do with, I think, their opening up to me to write that very challenging story about their survival at sea. Now that's this new generation of Vietnam veterans. But I got to tell you, I'm grateful for this because it's a different story for America.
Why do you say that?
It's our unfinished story.
The Vietnam story?
Yeah. I went from Seattle to Tampa on this book tour last September, and I was shocked. I was shocked by the way people in bookstores and libraries and civic clubs would stand up and say, I'd never spoken about Vietnam. So, I mean, you and I, we've all had things happening to us that are kind of important or life-changing. Just take that moment and then put it in a box and have someone tell you you can never talk about it. And that's essentially what happened to this generation coming home.
Ken Burns sort of discovered the same thing.
He did, and he really put a lot of light on this subject, and I think opened the door for further discussion. I mean, I hope people read this book. It's very closely observed. If you liked Horse Soldiers, I think you like this. It's totally different, though. This is very emotional, and it's really about the emotional journey of combat. It's less about the strategic. If you want a strategic book, it's like Dunkirk and Darkest Hours. You know, get them both. But I hope that you slide it across the table and to your uncle or your husband or your father, grandfather, and say, is this true? Did any of this happen to you?
The Odyssey of Echo Company. By the way, just one other question about Ken Burns' recent series on PBS about the Vietnam War. What was your reaction to that generally? You thought he did it pretty well, right?
Oh, I certainly did.
What else did you observe or think about that? What stood out to you about that?
Well, what was interesting, and I actually just did a piece with Lynn Novick, who co-produced it with him. And during that segment on C-SPAN recently, what I heard in some of the caller comments was they were chagrined at the amount of airtime that the North Vietnamese got in the series, which I understand from their point of view. I think, but I don't agree with it. But what it tells me, though, is that, like, so if we were to do a thing on World War II, no one would call in and say, hey, why you got the Germans in there so much? You know, what it says to us is that really this generation, and they're all around us as we look out in our own communities, doesn't feel like they've been heard. So what they're saying is, well, why are you listening to those guys? What about us? Now, for most academics and most people, reporters such as myself, we think, well, we've got tons of books about Vietnam. We've heard the American point of view, but we haven't heard the nitty-gritty, what it was like for Uncle Joe at your family reunion to come home from Vietnam. And that's what I tried to do.
I have a friend who's a Vietnam veteran, and I do know this about him. He thinks about it every day.
Right.
That it flavors his life every day. Is that true of most Vietnam veterans? And is that true of most veterans of combat?
I think it's true of most veterans of combat. I think it's especially true, is your uncle?
It's a friend, it's a neighbor.
Friend.
Yeah.
He's trying to find a period on the end of that sentence, which is he asks himself when he wakes up in the morning, what happened to me in Vietnam? And I think that's why it's more prevalent among this generation of veterans.
Well, certainly World War II veterans came home to a different welcome than the guys that were in the Tet Offensive.
Absolutely. And
and soldiers today are coming home to a different...
Largely, I think that's the legacy of the Vietnam War. It's one thing that we decided to do differently. And by the way, you know, Afghanistan, 18 years. At what point do we think has Afghanistan become our new Vietnam?
I don't think about it in those terms, maybe because the numbers aren't as high, or I don't know. We don't have daily coverage. What's our involvement in Afghanistan right now?
Well, you know, I was just talking with some people. I hear 14,000 troops. One guy at the State Department said 20. I don't think that's true, but we're 14 to 20 where we were with Obama, kind of at when he began to draw down. The Taliban have about 40% of the country. We have about 60. And the Afghans have been taking a beating in the last 3 or 4 years because the Taliban have been very bold. They would come into areas and do these incursions and blow things up. And one of the things that you can say about the present mindset over there is that they're trying to push back. Now, that doesn't mean they're gaining ground, but they want to actually be on the more of the offensive. I don't have an answer to Afghanistan. It is a pretzel.
The question I think you should be asked is, are there any lessons from Vietnam that we should, cautionary tales perhaps, but are there any lessons from Vietnam that we should learn that we can apply today to Afghanistan or to how we handle North Korea or to any of these countries?
I don't know about North Korea, but when you think about what we're doing differently in Afghanistan, so in Vietnam, you would have a CORDS program, which is essentially the Vietnamization, trying to get the Vietnamese to take over the war in its later years and winning, quote, hearts and minds. That's counterinsurgency is classic doctrine. But at the same time, the mandate was search and destroy. So you would go into an area and burn it down and then try to make friends with everybody. We're not doing that in Afghanistan. And that's a different, you know, that's counterinsurgency 2.0, largely because the technology is so much different. The technology with drones and surgical strikes and targeting one person out of a 10 square mile. So it's a different thing. I was talking to an intelligence officer from the CIA recently, and he said, what if Afghanistan became Switzerland? As odd as that sounds, but that each place is autonomous in its own way, but has some sense of unity, but is not nearly ever going to be a nation the way we think about it. It's a series of states.
That's a plausible idea?
Well, it used to exist in Afghanistan when they had a king. When they had a king, the king would say, all right, you guys, you don't have to believe me. You don't really have to even like me. But if you want any of my largesse, any of the coin from Kabul, you have to at least pay some homage to me. But I'm going to let you do what you want to do. And Kabul was a very cosmopolitan city, much like Michigan Avenue on a summer day, with women getting on buses and wearing
sunglasses. Isn't that hard to imagine? Isn't that hard to believe? Well, Lebanon used to be, Beirut used to be a golden city in the
1970s.
Yeah. Doug Stanton's in our studio, The Odyssey of Echo Company, out in paperback today, this year, the 50th anniversary of the Tet Offensive. So I want you to tell us a story from your book, representative of the book. What should we maybe remember about the Tet Offensive in a minute? You described rightly, right, that the Tet Offensive was a pivot point in the Vietnam War and maybe in America's consciousness about it. You talk about this one, Echo Company's battle or life there. Tell me a story from the book.
Story from the book. It's after the Tet Offensive. It's February of 1968. Stanley Parker from Gary, Indiana, the son of an iron worker.
Who volunteered
in 1966, graduating from high school. His father at the kitchen table had told him stories of World War II, where he'd been a bomber pilot. So Stanley is the son of World War II. That's really influencing his life more than, say, the looking forward to the protests to come and the protests that are already percolating. They're not really penetrating a lot of we have to go backwards because it was a different world media-wise. He joins up. He goes in, and intensely, the whole platoon is put into this a massive firefight, 100,000 MVA attack throughout the country simultaneously, a really shocking attack. It's ultimately unsuccessful, and they take a real pounding. They lose in the counterattack, which they had pinned so many hopes. In the middle of this, you find Stan and his squad walking through the rain in shower curtains, and he comes upon a young Vietnamese girl in the road. And he'd only been in country now. I mean, the fighting started January 30th, and so this is about February 8th. It's years, but it's really only about a week or so. And he looks at the girl, and he has this epiphany. He suddenly sees the war through her eyes, which is an eye-opening moment for a young conservative man from Gary, Indiana, who grew up in the shadow of the Cold War. And he wants to make her feel safe. He suddenly understands all the killing that he's already been part of. And he'd like to come back to that road years from now and do something for her. And he wishes someone could take care of her. So he reaches into his bag where he keeps his Claymore mines and gives her a can of peaches. And he hands it to her in her small hand. And he says, okay, we got to go now, because they don't know who's around them. And he begins to hustle up after his buddies. As he turns a corner, he hears gunshots. And he returns, and she's lying in the street, and she'd been killed by some enemy soldiers for accepting the can of peaches. And he breaks down in the middle of the street and realizes that this is his predicament in Vietnam. Even when I'm trying to help, I might as well have pointed the gun at her myself. So he picks her up and guards her all night, and waits for someone to come back, either to rescue her or someone, the guy who killed her, so that he can kill him. And no one comes. And finally, they have to leave. And this is the story he told me, and he wrote down, actually, that really convinced me that this was a journey. It was not a hero's journey, because he's not seeking for heroism, but it is a journey of a man trying to live through an experience, which is taking his whole life to do. It's not just about that moment of combat.
And this is a guy who's injured twice, and I guess what, after two injuries, mandatory, you're out? No, three times,
yeah.
Right? But he lied about one of them so that he could get back in?
He refused the third Purple Heart
That's
in April of 1968, which was incurred while he's in a knife fight in some brush with a guy that he'd wounded. He crawled in after him. And he doesn't want to go home after all this.
Why?
Well, when you talk to a lot of, because there's a brotherhood, this is where he belongs, and what the Vietnam War becomes, and what really many of these veterans I've interviewed is, their mission becomes staying alive and taking care of their brother, and it's hard for them to disengage. He would be walking down in the rain in that shower curtain, which they'd stolen from a schoolhouse, and he'd stop on the street corner and say to his buddy Riley, "Riley, do you realize right now in Gary, Indiana, there are girls on the street corner who don't even know we're here?" And then he'd pause. "Can you even remember what a woman looks like?" You know, so they're in this other world that is that's not our world.
Yeah. Okay, 50 years later, here we are, still dealing with it as a nation, and books like this sure help. Was this made into a movie? Not that that matters that much.
No, it's not. I hope it is, but it's not.
Yeah. Okay, well, another good one. What are you working on now, Doug?
I'm a musical comedy. Really?
I was going to be my guest, yeah.
I think it's time to do something a little different.
Well, you do this well. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Read Doug Stanton's The Odyssey of Echo Company. It's out in paperback today.